like to repeat this question. I did raise it once, but perhaps I didn't understand the answer. You always use the example of seeing as being the clearest example, but I just wonder why feeling is not used instead, because feeling arises with every citta, and feeling to me seems to be dominant at all times. And I said in this particular letter that seeing is just an uninteresting blur unless one happens to concentrate on one particular object or event. You know, if you're walking along the road, unless you look, actively look, it's not so predominant as maybe the actual feeling in the body of the walking or whatever else. Why feeling is not taken as a prime example.
So you mean that we better have feeling as the subject of discussion? Or what? We are talking about realities right now. What appears? So that we can understand that reality. Does feeling appear now?
Yes.
What kind of feeling?
At the moment, an ache in the leg.
Or a pain in the ear.
pain in the leg, or as Jonathan said, a pain in the ear. I would probably notice this because as you get older, you get more pain and so on. But, you know, the fact that Vedana is always present with every citta, whereas seeing isn't.
It is thinking about the truth that feeling arises with each citta, but what is now appearing, shouldn't we understand that or think about other thing which does not appear at all right now?
But feeling appears whether the eyes are open or not, or whether you're blind or not blind.
But what is appearing now?
You mean it appears or it arises?
Arises, yeah. At the moment, yes, seeing is at this very moment, seeing.
Whatever appears is hard or difficult to see the truth. What about that which does not appear? Is it harder or more difficult?
Kunsujin, I'd like to raise a few comments that were written by one of our friends this morning on DSG, and because it's quite long, I'll just break it into sentences and maybe you can just give a short response to each one. And I'm starting halfway down, but I may go back to the beginning afterwards. Okay, he says, and I'm just quoting, what bugs me about Ajahn Suchin is that elsewhere she talks about being patient, about not rushing to get at the heart of the Dharma, but then she says things like, just understand, to people who are dealing with issues, i.e. just get to the heart of the Buddha's teaching. Take this, for example, on guarding the sense doors. I think it's from this book. First, she quotes the suttas that goes, if he dwells with this organ of sight uncontrolled, evil, unskilled states might predominate. So he fares along controlling it, he guards the organ of sight, etc. And how does he do this according to Ajahn Suchin? Quote, this kind of restraint can be achieved through the development of panya that understands the realities that appear as they are. One will begin to let go of utter sanya with regard to whatever appears through the eyes, the ears, the nose, etc., according to the degree of panya that has been reached.
Should I tell anyone not to understand anything?
Well, I don't think so, because if there isn't any understanding, there isn't any development.
Can there be sense restraint without understanding? When they talk about Sambhala Siddha, I knew something was missing. Can there be that without?
But without understanding, can there be a moment of Indriya Samvara?
That's what I'm asking. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Indriya is eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body, mm-hmm. mind. Now there is seeing. when and where is the Indriya Sanvara, with or without understanding of the seeing of the object which is seen.
Okay, well, I've always thought it must be some sort of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I know the person who wrote that post. He has the feeling that, say, he doesn't have to have understanding, but say, if there's a pretty woman walking along the road, if he doesn't look, that's Indriya Sambhara Sila.
No.
At a level, that's one level.
No understanding, so how can it be Indriya?
Well, he would say, yes, he knows there's no understanding.
That can be Patimokkha Sila, but not Indriya Sambhara Sila. But who's that person, monk or lay person?
But you often say there is a guarding of the senses at whenever sati arises. So at moments of sati, there is a guarding. So it just depends on what kind of guarding we're referring to.
For example, whether or not it's Indriya Sanvara or just ordinary kusala moment.
Okay, to continue on, because he knows that's what your answer was going to be. And that is fine, that is true, but before that kind of liberating panya can be reached, there has to be so much more mundane and conventional guarding of the sense doors. She goes too deep, way too soon, as always. Here is what the Buddha says on the matter. If there is no sense control, O monks, then the basis for virtue is destroyed for one who lacks sense control. If there is no virtue, then the basis for right concentration is destroyed for one who lacks virtue. If there is no right concentration, then the basis for knowledge and vision of things as they really are is destroyed for one who lacks right understanding. So what he is suggesting is, when he says that he thinks you go too deep too soon, is that in the first place, sila has to be emphasized, and if there isn't good sila, how can there be developed panya?
He is talking about controlling, right?
I think so.
What reality can control? No I, no self, so there must be a reality which performs the function of God, or in another word here, control.
And that has to be with sati and panya.
Right, understanding.
Then it seems to me that such concerns are usually from people who don't really appreciate the danger of avicca.
And anatta.
Some people just want to be have more kusala,
yeah,
but not no more understanding.
One last comment. There is no leapfrogging to liberation. Ajahn Suchin does too much leapfrogging, I think. As she herself says, nobody can change the Buddha's teaching. And of course that applies to her.
There is seeing. I didn't say that anyone should become enlightened just by not understanding seeing right now at all. To begin to understand little by little, that's the only way.
I think people get stuck on the idea that there's something they can do to prepare to understand seeing an invisible object. It's because the lack of understanding of anatta and conditions arising, but people get very stuck on, but there must be something to do. All through their life, they've been able to do something.
And they think of many other things, but not of right understanding at all.
He also suggests that, because he knows the answer is going to come back, referring to self-view and control, that he suggests there must be just as much self-view and self-involved in our Dharma study as there is in other kinds of meditation. We will say something about meditators seeking to control dharmas, but that is the case in our pariyatti. He suggests that when we have a deep interest in knowing the presently arisen dharma, there's bound to be trying to have too much understanding.
Not much, just seeing. Now, to understand seeing as it is, not much.
The other point that started this discussion was he talks about looking to find emotional comfort in the Dharma and about becoming a better person. So I think it comes back to the purpose. And when I suggested, well, the reason we study Dharma is not for emotional comfort or something for oneself, he thinks that we're just kidding ourselves, we're not being honest or realistic.
If it's only thinking, no considering at all, then it's like that. But when one is very careful about every word in the teachings about the truth of reality right now, it's not like that.
I don't see any problem with occasionally enjoying and attaching to the emotional aspects at times.
Is sleeping the one who does not understand reality right now at all from moment to moment and try to stop or to control, is that not sleeping? So actually, who's sleeping?
Utter.
The one who thinks that not necessary to understand reality right now.
I think the poster is saying, overall he's saying, first purify Sila very correctly.
With what?
By obvious methods like not looking
the
at
the seven visuti, beginning from Sila visuti. What can purify Sila in order to go through the end, the seventh one?
Yeah, I'm just trying to point out what he thinks. He's read the Visuddhi Magga, for example, and he sees the first sila, then samadhi, then panya.
So and what about the seven Visuddhi?
Well, in the Visuddhi Magga, he refers, he has referred to...
Visuddhi Magga must agree with the teachings. Mm. I think that it depends on the reader.
Mm.
It's written that way, but no understanding about that point. Like, anyone can use the word sila visuti, or the... But it's the first, in order to have citta visuti, and titi visuti, and the rest, and the other visuti. But what can purify sila in order to be sila visuti?
So it's not a progression...
With right understanding only, because it will lead to the end.
So right understanding is almost first.
Otherwise, why did Buddha teach if there is not for understanding reality as it is?
Back to basics. Ajahn, many times you say sati is aware. What does aware mean?
When we heard the term sati in Pali, it means a reality for sure. And that reality has to be wholesome one. So sati cannot arise with akusala citta at all. And in order to see that sati is not panya and sati is not concentration, sati is a moment of being aware of a reality which usually there is no awareness of it at all. Like today, there are moments of touching, seeing, thinking, but no awareness of any characteristic as Dhamma at all. So without understanding the teachings about the true nature of realities, it's impossible to have awareness of any characteristic which is now appearing. For example, the object of seeing is appearing, sound is appearing, thinking is appearing, no sati, no aware, no understanding of the characteristic of anyone, because each reality has its own characteristic. Like now, what is seen is not sound. We don't have to say that that is called sound and this is called whisper object. But its characteristic is there. No one can change. To learn that there is no one, no thing in it, but it's that which can be seen.
This is the way to become detached from the idea of someone or something, which is always in between. Unknown, because at this moment it seems like I see someone, I see something. But what is there between the visible object and the idea of things or I? See, those moments are ignorance. So in order to see that reality is different, seeing is not thinking. And at moment of seeing, what is seen is the object of seeing. And the moment of thinking can be anything, even the object of seeing or other object. This is to understand that there is no self, but life is like this. It has to go on by conditions. No matter who understands or not, it has to be like this.
So that function of being aware is like distinguishing.
We are talking about, for example, hardness. Does it appear?
It can appear, yes.
When it appears to body consciousness as usual. Mm-hmm. When it's usually appeared to body consciousness only, there is no awareness of a characteristic which is hard as just a reality, which nobody can change its characteristic to something or someone at all. But when there is no awareness of hardness, I'm touching a glass, a table, see, all the ideas come in instantly, not knowing the true nature of hardness as just a moment of appearing of a reality which is hard. See, and when there is no awareness of hardness in the day, one knows that there is no awareness of it, because there is thinking about it instantly, all the time. But when there is the understanding of hardness, which is not thinking, when it's touched, it's hard, but no understanding without awareness, this can condition awareness to arise after body consciousness has experienced hardness, and awareness is aware of that which appears, whether it's hardness or whether it's body consciousness. This is the beginning to understand realities that Buddha had enlightened and taught.
So it is always, it distinguishes the characteristics.
It begins to understand the pure, the absolute characteristic as not anything at all.
If someone has never heard Dharma, listen to Dharma, they know at the level of thinking that there are a lot of different experiences through the body. Well, they may be able to talk about that. Yes. So, is sati performing its function at those times also, or does it only begin when there is an understanding of Dharma?
You can ask anyone whether it's hard or soft, they can say. He or she can say hard or soft, but no understanding as a characteristic of a reality at all.
So that's the essential difference. Mm-hmm.
Cannot be any satipatthana before hearing the Buddha's teaching.
That's why right understanding grows from stage to stage. Intellectual understanding will condition the patipatti, and patipatti will condition pativeda.
Does the function of sati change with the development of understanding, or does it always simply perform that function of recognizing a character?
Sati is awareness. It cannot be panya. It cannot be concentration.
So it is always the same function.
Which is aware. While one is talking, there can be conditions for awareness to arise, see, naturally, as anatta, as it is, like other realities. So it's not different from this moment, only it arises or not arise by conditions.
And when we talk about satipatthana,
what does it Well, I can only say from intellectual understanding that it's insight.
Three meanings insight. Of Satipatthana, Kundrava. The object is one meaning. The object which awareness is aware of. And the sati itself at that moment is not sati at level of dana or sila or samadhi. And the third one, no apicca tomanat, no matter who, for Buddha and anyone, whether one likes it or does not like it. But actually this should mean that it's the path which all Aaron. Okay. That's all.
Could you explain that third one a little?
Can you explain the three of them again?
Yes. Sorry. Any object can be object of awareness.
Any reality.
Of awareness, of sati.
But not a concept. Object can't be concept, right?
For satipatthana. No. And the second one is sati itself, which is aware. And this is the only path leading to enlightenment.
So sati in conjunction with panya, a particular type of
thing. Yeah. Uh-huh. When we're talking about development, no matter it's samatha or satipatthana or vipassana, it has to be with panya.
Sati aware of sati.
Anything.
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 The second one was just a characteristic of sati itself.
Okay. I'm sorry, I'm confused because
the first one is the object of satipatthana, so any nama or rupa, such as visible object, hardness, seeing, any reality, which is the object of satipatthana. And the second one is sati, the chetasika, which is aware of the reality. And the third one is the path of satipatthana, which has to have been followed by the Buddha and the Aryan disciples in order to become enlightened.
What I'm confused about is going back to Maeve's question. Sati, Ajahn, you define it as a characteristic of reality which just appears, is it?
Sati is a reality and it has to be wholesome reality, sobra. It cannot be akusala at all. Lopa is akusala, dosa is akusala, but sati is not kusala.
But it understands the characteristic of...
Excuse me. Sati cannot understand because it's not panya.
I misunderstood. So it just knows.
That's why it's wanted to understand more about this notion of awareness. What is awareness? What is that function of awareness? And Ajahn's answer was that it is the knowing of the characteristic of the reality that appears.
For example, if visible object appears, it's aware of the characteristic of visible object. But it's panya which knows what that object is, that understands it. But they rise together.
And when we understand that it can only arise during a Buddhist sasana, satipatthana, you can see it's not as easy as it must, that it first appears.
Because it's one of the Eightfold Paths.
Mm.
So just to return to the development of intellectual understanding, sati can arise without satipatthana.
There are many levels, many yes. degrees of sati.
Yes, I think that's what I'm getting at. Could you perhaps describe the difference between some of those levels, please?
Whenever kusala citta or wholesome citta arises, there must be sati accompanying. We can say that sati is one of the factors of citta to be kusala or wholesome.
And that is why you say someone can practice dana or sila, but without understanding.
What do you mean by practice again?
Oh, well, sorry. Dana anytime, can arise.
Anytime yes. kusala citta or wholesome citta arises, there must be sati, which is aware of such and such moments. to be such and such level of kusala.
If those moments continue to arise, though, it is not from understanding, but more from accumulations. Is that the case?
Everything is accumulated from moment to moment.
John, I think I just heard you say that a moment of generosity, giving, that sati needs to, there will be sati arising because it is kusala, and it would know that it was kusala. Did I mistake that?
It's a function of being aware.
Being aware. But before hearing the Dhamma, it is possible to know that giving, sharing, is a good thing to do. It is kusala.
Just to know how to give?
Both.
One can give without understanding.
Yes, and that's what would happen. But one would still know that it was a good thing to do. But it wouldn't be the understanding of kusala as in...
of not self.
Yes, yes.
Sometimes in the suttas, the Eightfold Path seems very conventional, like when they talk about the virati sometimes, like right livelihood, like he's not a butcher and so on. It seems so conventional that whether one is Buddhist or not Buddhist or heard the Dharma or not, one may have some of those parts of the Eightfold Path. Whereas at other times, it's very much a Buddhist thing.
Man, don't leave out this sammasati and sammaditti and sammavayamo and the rest.
Okay, that have to arise together with those type of right livelihood, I see. It's a little bit hard to just distinguish from reading the suttas.
So it depends on right understanding and sammasankappa and sammasati too.
I think this links to a topic we were discussing on the first day, that would be Saturday, just before the lunch break. Because when it comes to Samasamadhi, which it describes in terms of the four jhanas, if one read that particular path factor, one could get the impression that Samasamadhi was a kind of a standalone factor to be developed. And I think Venerable Panyabhalo was mentioning the role of jhana in terms of the Buddha's enlightenment and parinibbana. And at that stage we had to break for lunch. So perhaps we could come back to that general topic at the moment.
Would like to follow the Buddha's development?
No, really. In so many suttas, the Buddha talks about the benefits of the holy life. Now, I don't associate the holy life with wearing robes. Everybody here is living the holy life. I mean, that's something Sukhin said to me the other day when you said how many people are doing this at the moment, studying like this. So everybody here I consider to be living the holy life in that way. The benefit was the joy as compared to the joys of somebody not following the path, sensual pleasures and this kind of thing, the joy of jhana. But we miss out on all that because we don't practice jhana.
Without the understanding of what jhana is, can anyone practice it?
No, I haven't got a clue what jhana is. And that's why I keep coming back to it, because I feel I should have, yeah?
So everything should be carefully studied.
Can I bring it back to John's initial point about sometimes the samadhi in the Eightfold Path, though, is defined as the four jhana, first four mundane jhana. Why is that?
For whom?
For the jhana labhing?
Mm-hmm. Only.
Yeah.
Sorry, what is the word you're using, Robert?
Jhana labhi.
Which is? Someone with skilled, the accumulations.
Master of jhana.
And would the correct understanding of that be one who has accumulations?
Who is so skilled in attaining jhana at any time, at any place.
So that when they leave jhana, instantly they can also develop
And who can think and understand the factors of jhana at any time too?
So that then the jhana becomes the basis for insight.
When it's so skillful, it can arise, and the development of right understanding of any reality can be aware of it and become detached. The most important thing is to become detached from taking it for my jhana.
And that would include wanting it for the joy and peace.
But that would be attachment. Is desire, there is no panya.
Ajahn, when we talk about living the holy life, we're really only talking about a moment of kusala.
Because even abstaining from ill akusala is not easy. Without panya, it's impossible. So it doesn't mean that one should abstain from ill deeds or ill will, and then one has to do good deeds and then purify the mind. It's not like that. It has to be understanding of what can abstain from ill deed at that very moment too. Not the self, not I at all. If we do not study carefully, we think that he taught us to abstain at will or by oneself.
Sorry, could you just repeat the whole thing again?
Can anyone abstain from ill deeds, ill speech, when it is conditioned to arise?
So what is meant by abstain from evil?
If viruti jetasika does not arise, like samma vaca or samma kammanta or samma ajiva, there is no abstention from ill deeds, ill speech.
What is happening conventionally if someone looks like they're abstaining? Say there's no kusala jetasika arising, but the person doesn't look at the pretty girl. You can do that by self, by trying to control. Without any kusala arising, you can look away.
Kusala or akusala arising?
Can be akusala.
Kusala or akusala?
It could be either. The conventional action could
be... Is it dana, or sila, or samatha, or vipassana, or just want to do that? Going left and going right, which way is kusala, or both are akusala?
Probably both are akusala, most of the time.
Just for oneself.
I don't understand why then did the Buddha say that abstain from evil if this needs us, all these other things as preconditions to do that. So I just don't get this.
Just conditioning. If the Buddha says sustain from doing evil, that's a means by which someone could hear that and then appreciate it. Doesn't mean they're going to be able to do it. But they can appreciate it. The Buddha would say something like sustain from doing evil, but it doesn't mean that you can always do it. But it can be a condition for maybe sometimes not doing it. And the whole Buddha's teaching is that way, right? If we didn't have the Buddha's teaching, we wouldn't be sitting here now discussing Dhamma. It's a condition for us to study Dhamma and to have understanding. He didn't say you have to know this, he just simply spoke Dhamma. And if it appeals to us in any way, then we study it and we grow in some degree of wisdom. But it was never a demand that you should be this way.
Well, I'm still confused because Ivan, if it's all dependent on conditions, where does the Buddha come into the picture?
Conditions are there to keep coming and trying to understand. And we have to understand that there's no one doing anything. It's just purely conditions arising that makes us want to know more.
When exactly can we refer to ekagata as samadhi?
Any moment.
Any moment, not just when it's currently fixed on an object.
Samadhi is the Dharma that focuses on an object. It is ekagata chetasika, accompanying each citta. So this is what Kunsuchin just said, any time. When the citta is absorbed in an object for a long time, the characteristic of ekagata chetasika manifests itself as samadhi, concentration.
It becomes more obvious when it's there.
But in fact, it is there at each moment. Yes. And people often refer to the list of points which we read about in the Vasudhimagga about how he should avoid a dwelling when the mental image that has not yet arisen does not arise. He should not be too far from an alms resort or too near. He should avoid unsuitable speech. He should avoid people who are full of defilements. He should avoid unsuitable speech, etc. Now, in the chapter in your book, this list is referred to after samatha has been developed, when it's talking about guarding the counter image and calm to the degree of apana samadhi is about to be reached. So in fact, from what I understand, the way that it's presented and my general understanding is these points is only actually relevant when apana samadhi is about to be attained for the jhana practitioner. Is that correct? The reason I ask is because many people think, oh, okay, they have an interest in developing samatha, so this is like a list to be followed. But actually, I believe it's only applicable for those who have developed samatha to that degree.
And what understand that? Not I.
But that is correct.
Someone was intent on developing jhana, whether they have much samatha or not, surely they would have to go to a secluded place and follow those points that are listed in your book. Well before they attain jhana, they would need to develop samatha correctly. They would need to be in seclusion, etc., etc., I would imagine.
Are you talking about the development of kusala, ma kusala?
I'm talking about the development of jhana.
Yes. Is it talk about developing ma kusala?
Well, it must be. Yes. We're talking about jhana's very high level of kusala.
With panya.
With panya, sure. Yeah. So that type of development of that very high level of kusala,
depending on panya,
daily life,
depending on panya from the very beginning.
Yes. Before much development of samatha can occur, there must be panya, but there must also be those supporting conditions. Mm-hmm. Correct?
And what knows the panya knows.
You say that jhana is always kusala, yes?
It depends on, we are talking about the factors of jhana, or jhana as we know, like the absorption concentration, which is the development of tranquility.
The reason I ask is because this sutta, the Saparisa sutta, talking about the true person and the untrue person, and the quote that I... But the true man considers us non-identification even with the attainment of the base of neither perception nor non-perception has been declared by the Blessed One. For in whatever way they conceive, the fact is other than that. So putting non-identification first, he neither lauds himself nor disparages others because of his attainment of the base of neither perception nor non-perception. This too is the character of a true man, and that's contrasted with, of course, the untrue person who looks down on others because they're unable to attain that level of jhana. And then it goes on, moreover, by completely surmounting the base of neither perception nor non-perception, a true man enters and abides in the cessation of perception and feeling, and his taints are destroyed by his seeing with wisdom. This bhikkhu does not conceive anything. He does not conceive in regard to anything. He does not conceive in any way. And Bhikkhu Bodhi says basically that different modes of conceiving, that basically all are misplaced sense of ego, self. So it suggests to me that you can practice jhana up to the very highest level and still be akusala.
After the jhana.
Okay, right. Yeah, okay. Well, okay.
Have you heard about akusala jhana, kusala jhana, and abhyankara jhana?
Yes.
It depends on citta, because that is about the factors of jhana.
Just coming back to these points like avoiding people with defilements and the dwelling and this kind of thing, I think it's quite important because people have the idea of developing samatha in order to attain jhana and first putting these conditions in place. And as you stressed, what's important is the understanding and the understanding of what is kusala and what is akusala. When you talk about understanding what is kusala and what is akusala before, say, following these points or conditions, what degree of understanding of kusala and akusala are you referring to?
You mean before the development of jhana or what?
Before the development of jhana. When Robert suggested that for the one who had the idea of developing jhana,
okay,
from
this point.
Okay.
Who are wishing? No one or someone? And wishing without right understanding is right or wrong? That person might think that he's going to develop jhana, but no understanding of jhana. So okay. How can he develop it?
Can't.
From the very beginning.
Yeah.
There must be right understanding.
So that's why from the beginning, there's no point avoiding people or setting up a particular kind of accommodation if the cheetahs are just loba cheetahs wishing to develop something.
When the Buddha talks about the person who's gone to the forest, right, and there's different ways you can go to the forest. You can go to the forest as a complete fool and develop nothing, or you can go to the forest because the Buddha said, or you can go to the forest because it's the thing to do. And by the thing to do, it means because one has the wisdom to understand that the forest is the correct place. Now, there might be three or four people who go to the forest and outwardly look the same, but obviously it does depend on whether there's wisdom or not. Nevertheless, they do go to the forest if they're going to develop jhana, I think, and seclusion in some way.
But only one will have the correct understanding.
Yes.
And also one's good accumulation too.
Accumulation too.
Yeah. If one isn't naturally inclined to be interested in jhana, is there a good reason to learn about it?
Okay, let's say that who's inclined to develop kusala, even right now, instead of thinking about jhana so far, so great, yeah?
Yes. I find there's a lot of interest in it, especially on the DSG, and it's, I guess my question, and I think you've answered it, is if you're not naturally interested or inclined, is it a useful thing to learn about?
Just to know that this moment is kusala and akusala, it's the beginning of developing jhana. When samatha grows or develops, yeah, it reaches the degree of absorption concentration.
Yes.
So not developing jhana, but developing samatha is very relevant for everyone. It's not a matter of whether one has an interest or accumulations for it. It's like developing dana or sila.
Yes.
Or
is that because the development of samatha is one of the necessary
is the development
things
of
for
kusala?
Yeah, for kusala and for the growth of panya, etc. These other factors
can be developed
in daily life and grow as well.
What would be an example of samatha in daily life, Ajahn?
At moment of kusala.
Particularly if the kusala is not of the level of dana or sila, but metta, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, I'd like to just build a little bit on the topic. So yesterday or the day before, you were saying thinking of, who's thinking of the quiet place attachment.
Without understanding.
So it's just without understanding, thinking of a quiet place is just attachment. And we were also talking the other day about viveka, bodily and mental seclusion. Now, last time we were in Bangkok, we were discussing the Mahasatchika Sutta and viveka, bodily and mental seclusion. And you made the comment that all the references to solitude and seclusion are to mental states, no physical quiet or seclusion. And then you said, is it quiet now? Is there solitude, i.e. seclusion from sense attachments now? And that it depends on the context whether the term in the suttas is referring just to jhana or to jhana and vipassana or just to vipassana. What you said then, or what I wrote down then, was all the references to solitude and seclusion are to mental states, not to physical quiet or seclusion. But this seemed a little different from what you were saying the other day when we were talking about kaya viveka.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the degree of kaya viveka. Even one sit alone in a quiet place with akusa citta, is that kaya viveka?
No.
That's the first meaning of it. But even so, when the citta is kusala, what about staying crowded with people? Is that what the Buddha taught for monks? No. So there are two meanings. The first is kaya viveka does not depend on place. It depends on citta. But even so, when it grows much more, what about the teaching is to be alone, no crowded at all. So it depends on how much you can reach.
Once the Buddha looked at Ananda, he saw the monks involved in sewing their robes. And he criticized the monks there, so involved in sewing robes and so on, implying that they shouldn't worry so much about that and should be alone, not coming together so much. Right?
It depends in the text or the sutta which meaning is being referred to.
Ajahn, this actually refers back to something that we were speaking about yesterday. Kuntom raised a question about heart base. And Robert, I think you gave some explanations about that. But it led me to think about the rupas that are in that category of derived rupas. And I'm rather confused about the meaning of the description of these rupas, because the descriptions sound like concepts.
No reality.
Well, I can't really grasp what the reality is. For example, things like space and material life principle.
You mean that there is no space?
Well, it sounds like concept.
But that is space, not just concept.
And the material life principle? Sounds very conceptual.
No space.
Yeah, if we had none of this, it'd all be condensed.
Just one piece of the world.
Yeah, a black hole. Mm.
Life principle.
Okay, yes.
You can see the difference between the rupas of a living being to rupas that.
That sounds like an intangible one. Are these rupas more subtle than hardness or visible object?
How many rupas are coarse and how many rupas are subtle?
12.
Yes. The sense objects and the five sense spaces are coarse and the others are all
that
subtle.
That makes sense. Which is again why you keep bringing us back to visible object. Uh-huh. And hardness,
because you always think of other things, not just what is appearing.
But the experience of hardness, not the body sense itself, is experienced, I think, usually. Mm-hmm. Would I be correct there, Ajahn?
The citta experiences.
Yes. Citta experience is usually hardness, but not citta doesn't seem to usually experience the actual body base, the prasada. But it seems very subtle too. I mean, I think I've never known eye base.
As one can know that there is it now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as subtle like the other srupa.
I'm sorry, I'm not. Was your answer that body sense cannot be experienced?
Can you? It can, but by whom?
It can be experienced. That's what I... By citta.
By developed wisdom.
Yes, developed panya. Wisdom. By panya.
No selection.
Mm.
Are we saying that body sense can never be experienced in the absence of panya?
Who experiences body sense now?
As I understand it, possibly none of us experience body
can
sense.
Can be experienced when, who?
Well, I'm wondering, can only the experience when there's panya?
Yes.
Whereas visible object can be experienced all the time. Body sense only means panya.
His question is, regardless of whether there's any understanding or awareness, is body sense ever object of consciousness?
It can be proven right now.
It can be proven. But
whether it is object or not.
Ajahn, can you explain this, please?
What is experience?
Hardness and heat.
Visible object and thinking about the concepts about them.
Would you like to change life? Experience the basis instead of object?
When there is an idea, for example, in conventional language, one's bitten by a mosquito and feels an itch in a certain part of one's body. So it seems that even without any awareness or understanding, there's obviously the thinking about the location or the body sense. So if body sense is never actually experienced, why is the thinking about that particular location?
So the body sense, the body consciousness experiences what?
Yes,
the hardness.
It seems like the object in daily life is not as interesting as other objects.
If I watch the same movie 100 times, I get bored with it.
And when there will be the right understanding of it.
So we need encouragement and reminders about how important it is to understand.
Can I go back to the mosquito? Not the mosquito, the bite, the body sense. Not the body sense, the location. Something was said about body consciousness experiences hardness and heat at a location.
Thinking. What do you mean location?
Is on the body.
That which body consciousness experience?
The location is that which body consciousness experiences. Wouldn't it be heat or hardness that body consciousness...
And you name or call it something like body sense?
For instance, sitting now. I can feel hardness.
By what experiences hardness?
Body sense. No. Body consciousness. So there is no such thing as location, ultimately. Great.
No rupa?
As
the base?
As a rupa, yes.
Yeah.
The rupa is the base.
For body consciousness to
yes.
An experience, heat, cold, softness, hardness.
We have to use words like location, because it arises at a particular location.
Mm-hmm.
But when we talk about body consciousness experiencing the hardness, there's no location, no idea or no experience of location, because it's only the hardness which is experienced.
Okay.
But we still need to talk about location sometimes. That seeing consciousness must arise at a particular location. What is that location?
Seeing eye base.
Yes, and where is the eye base? Exactly. So
yes.
Even though you're not thinking, when seeing occurs, you don't have to think, oh, I better make it appear at the eye base. Because it will appear naturally.
That's the only place it can appear.
The question that Anne was picking up on was,
because when there's awareness of hardness, or when hardness is experienced, there's no idea of location. So if the body sense is not actually experienced, why is there so much thinking about the location or the body sense?
I think that you think about my arms, my legs, my head, instead of the location of the body consciousness.
This is thinking about the idea of it rather than it is.
Can the body best be touched?
No.
See?
It can't, eh?
No.
It's not, because what we think of as body conventionally is a concept.
Because it's the rupa which is different from the four primary rupas.
We can say that actually it's a little bit like when we were talking about the kalapas of and the different colours or whatever. It's think about the sense basis is actually quite a distraction in a way, in that all that can be known or all can be understood is the hardness or the experiencing of it, and the rest is just thinking about it only.
And Robert said before that the eye is here and not on the toe. Does that sort of understanding ever help us with Satipatthana, or is it completely devoid of the same?
By thinking or by understanding?
Well, by understanding that the eye
by
is
understanding.
On the head.
Seeing cannot be there at the foot.
For the purposes of Satipatthana, do I need to know that there is such a thing as a head and a foot? Because they're only concepts, they're not dharmas.
No memory about your whole body at all? Or even whatever appears, you take it for here or there, leg or arms or head, it's still there in your memory. Because citta arises and falls away so fast, you do not have completely understanding of just a reality only, but you keep the idea of my body too.
Just following from that, Ajahn, I'm remembering something that you said, Pankrajan, about when we have the idea of self, self needs a place to be, like we think of ourselves, so then we think about where we are. What's the difference between that and the kind of location that we're talking about? Is there any difference?
I think that while one sees, there is also the idea that here are we sitting or standing. My legs are still there, even we don't touch it.
Seeing with right understanding?
Pardon?
Seeing with right understanding?
No, not right understanding, because it's atta sanya.
So just
it's still an idea of something or someone or my eye or my leg or arm or the place, the location. It's not anything to do with understanding of reality. I think that was the point Ken was making, perhaps.
It's like the question whether you have lung now.
Have?
Lung.
Lung.
Blood. Nails.
Thinking about them.
So there is no all these things except seeing itself.
Just
a moment of seeing. Nothing there. Or it's still there. Because if we ask anyone, do you have blood or ribs? They say, yes, I do.
I hope I do.
They think they do. They do have. They do still have it. May we talk just a little bit about Kaya Vinyati? Because in some places, or when we talk about the Kaya Dvara of deeds or action, it also pointed to Kaya Vinyati. So usually, when there is intention to have some meaning of the action of the body, it's conditioned by citta, because that rupa follows the intention to have it to be such and such. So at any time when there is such idea, that is kaya vinyati.
So even if I don't want anyone to know what I'm doing,
but you have intention to have the body move or be that way.
Okay. So that's slightly different than 10 years ago that you said to me.
I think that we have to be very refined or find thoughts about it carefully, because otherwise one might think that any time that is kaya vinyati.
Okay.
But actually only when the chitta wants to.
Okay. So and involuntary movement is not kaya vinyati.
And usually when there is the action like waving your hand or things like that, it bears the meaning. So we talk about that first in the beginning. But in order to know further about kaya vinyati, when it's the kaya dvara, it is any moment when there is intention to have such action bear something or has its meaning for yourself or for the others.
Okay, for yourself or for the others.
Yes. Like when you aim to fire or doing something to shoot the arrow or the gun.
Okay.
At that moment, you have the idea to have it move the way you want to. Mm-hmm. That is kaya vinyati. That's why it is kaya dvara for for a kusla action, killing or things like that.
Oh, that's good. That makes sense to me. What about I'm home by myself and I go and reach for a glass of water? That is kaya vinyati.
Usually, do you think that you have it to be the way you want or only sometimes? Like a model or walking in such a way,
no.
Different from not on the stage. When you want the body to move with some meaning in it.
Well, if I'm getting a glass of water, I want my hand to go and pick up the glass
correctly. Each time, or in a nice way, or different way, particular way, different from usual.
Or do you just take it without thinking about it?
So if I just take it carelessly, that's not kaya vinyati.
Do you have in your mind to make it such and such manners?
At some level. Possibly.
If it's not in such particular manner, it's automatically. That's why there are many kalapas conditioned by citta, some with kaya vinyati and some without kaya vinyati.
And what would you call those when it's not kaya vinyati?
It's with that kalapa has no kaya vinyati. But for vajivinyati, any time, it's...
Any stage.
It's vajivinyati.
What about coughing?
Pardon?
How about coughing? If I cough, is that vajivinyati?
Do you have intention to have it specially done in such a special manner?
No, but what would you call... Because there is rupa being conditioned anyway, even if it's habitual and not...
So we have to come to... the different kalapas, which is conditioned by citta.
But is there a term for that? What rupa
no,
is that?
No kaya vinyati, no vati vinyati.
No kaya vinyati.
Yeah.
So what is it?
Well, other rupas just conditioned by citta, but not that the kaya vinyati and the citta vinyati.
There are numbers for each kalapa too. How many numbers of rupa for each different kalapas? Conditioned by citta.
Ajahn, then how about breath? Because it seems that breath, a lot of the time, is involuntary.
No kaya vinyati.
But sometimes...
I think it's always...
Sometimes it's like...
When you have intention. Make it in proper manners, that to be the way like you like it to be. To have the meaning to be like your intention. What?
Okay.
Well, that's kaya vinyati. That's kaya vinyati.
Vinyati is the rupa which follows the intention of citta in such and such manners.
Okay. I do swimming now, and I have a swimming coach.
If no one watch you.
Even though I'm watching,
I'm very
conventionally mindful to do the stroke very carefully in a certain
it
way.
It depends on citta. That's why the kalapa, citta, charupa depends on citta, whether there is such intention or not. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So no one can tell, just for yourself. And you know, right then, whether you have such intention to have it arise in such and such manners or not.
Would an example be, for instance, when you are first learning a new skill that involves bodily movement, for instance, yoga, there is a lot of Gaya Vinyati involved in moving in various directions, but after you have done it for a long time,
you know yourself.
You just do it. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to think about it.
Whether there is Gaya Vinyati or not, and it arises and falls away with Chitta, see, the two rupas, which doesn't last for 17 moments. Right. See?
Only two. Rupa that last.
Non-concrete rupas.
Yeah, so it only lasts 2 moments. Of
no.
What's the
it arises and falls away with Chitta.
Just reminded me about these terms, Kaya Sankara, Vachi Sankara, Chitta Sankara, in Majjhima 44, where it says, what are Kaya Sankara, etc. And then it says, in and out breaths are Kaya Sankara. Directed thought, I have to check the Pali, but starting off with, why are in and out breaths Kaya Vinkara? Because they are tied up with the body. And then I think for the next one, it refers to Vitaka Vichara are Vachi Sankara. Why are in and out breaths given as Kaya Sankara and Vitaka and Vichara given as Vachi Sankara?
Without breath, can the body survive?
Okay. And one could also say then, without Vitaka, there cannot be any
speech.
Okay, so it's like a proximate condition or a essential ingredient. And the last one was Sanya and Vedana are Chitta Sankara, the same thing as essential ingredients. Yes.
When thoughts of the Dhamma arise,
in what way?
Walking down the street.
Thinking of Dhamma?
Mm-hmm. Just thinking about something we might have heard recently. That the people and objects that one thinks one sees are not absolute realities or actually concepts. I guess I'm trying to pinpoint the distinction between just thinking about Dhamma, thoughts arising, and actually considering an intellectual understanding of absolute realities.
What about thinking pop up like seeing is Dhamma? That is thinking about seeing.
Yes.
But not the actual moment of understanding. Correct. Seeing right there.
Correct. It's not the actual moment of seeing, for sure, but is there any intellectual... Jonathan, thank you. To the rescue.
Well, I think a lot depends on what kind of thinking. There's so many different kinds of thinking. There can be thinking about discussion or an exchange that one is having. Or has recently had. There can be a thought just pop up into one's mind, as Ajahn just said. And then there can be thinking about what is appearing at the present moment in terms of what we understand from our discussions to be happening at the present moment. It's one thing to be discussing that in a context like this, and it's another thing to be repeating it to oneself as one walks down the street.
At that point, yeah, there may well not be
like
considering.
Trying to understand.
Yeah. Or not much considering.
Forgetting what?
Getting directed
there. Forgetting that it's only thinking.
Yes.
So there are many levels of understanding. One might think that one is trying to understand by thinking about or thinking over it in order to understanding it. But at that moment, it's not the understanding that is only thinking.
Like when one's puzzled about some point and is trying to work it out or something like that, and actually it's about Dhamma, but one's just lost in the story of Dhamma without any understanding of reality in it. I have a very quick question that either Kunsu Chin or Bhante might be able to answer. A friend on DSG, he referred to these three kinds of sadha, and then I tried to look it up in the dictionary and I couldn't find it. I don't know if you're familiar with it.
first one, this is a friend from Sri Lanka, he mentioned was Amulika Sada, which he translated as rootless, baseless, or foundationless Sada, and then just Sada, and then Akaravati Sada. And he says that Akaravati Sada is translated by Jayatileke as rational faith. Are you familiar with these?
I understand it to be the faith of an Aryan.
The faith of an Aryan.
If I remember right, yes. I think the term only applies to a Sota panel.
Okay. Akaravati. And what about Amulika Sada, rootless or baseless Sada? Are you familiar with this?
I'm not quite sure, but I think that's when it's being used in a disparaging way. So it's not referring to the Paramita Dhamma of Sata, but it's referring to like there's a verse in the Dhammapada which commends not having Sata. Has someone got a copy of the Dhammapada here? Right. And then in this case, it's referring to the word Sata is being used, but it doesn't refer to faith. It refers to a. I don't remember which Chittasika is identified with, but it's just faith being used as a term for something else.
With regard to the last one, the Akaravati Sada, he says that this appears in suttas such as the Vimamsaka Sutta of Majjhima, which refers to the stream enterer or the Aryan. The word akara means a manner of doing something or a method. Akara vantu means endowed with a manner of doing. Here it refers to the Aryan path. Okay, so that one is clear.
That kind of satara that's not really satara is adimokkha, accompanying anakusala citta.
Okay, yeah. So yes. It's like a cheating dharma,
right.
So
right,
it's...
Right.
Adimokkha that is taken for being sadha.
In the case of faith, it's adimokkha, the bad kind of faith. It's adimokkha that arises within akusala citta, but which conventionally might be referred to as faith. He resolves upon something.
But in an akusala way.